Hello, this is Dustin Tomacara, reading from the Decatur Herald and Review for April 10th, 2019. First story is entitled Sheriff's Cells Investigated. Deputies Purchase a Foreclosed Property Probed by Tony Reed from Decatur. A special prosecutor is deciding whether to pursue charges of official misconduct against members of the Macon County Sheriff's Office who may have been involved with property sales that violated state law. The case stems from a complaint investigated by Illinois State Police that a sheriff's deputy made unlawful purchases of homes and foreclosure sales. The sheriff's office conducts these sales, at which foreclosed properties are sold by public auction, and state law forbids sheriff's deputies and other employees from buying foreclosed properties in the counties where they preside. The complaint and charges are described in a motion filed by First Assistant State's Attorney Nicole Kronk, who sought the special prosecutor to avoid a conflict of interest. The legal filing does not name those involved, and State's Attorney Jay Scott and Macon County Sheriff Tony Brown both declined comment. Speaking exclusively to the Herald and Review, Lieutenant Chris Thompson, the Macon County Jail Superintendent, confirmed that he has been interviewed last month by state police investigators. Thompson said he runs a private business buying and selling homes and strongly denied any wrongdoing on his part or anyone associated with him. Property records obtained by the Herald and Review from the Macon County Recorder's Office show that Thompson has purchased multiple homes sold by the Sheriff's Office in recent years. At least four were later resold by Thompson for a higher price. Thompson responded to questions from the Herald and Review through his private attorney, Steve Jones. In a statement, Jones said Thompson has run his side business for 14 years, buying, renting, and selling family homes, always acting as a private citizen on his own time and using his own money. All judicial sales transactions are a matter of public record and are actually held in a courtroom, Jones said. Chris has always taken possession of the properties he has purchased in his own name. In all the judicial sales Chris has participated in, he was always on his own time and he was never on duty when the sales occurred. Initial complaint. Kronk's motion calling for the special prosecutor filed last month in Macon County Circuit Court cites a complaint received from a Ms. Jones that described unlawful foreclosure sales by the sheriff's office. The motion continued. The anonymous letter listed various real estate purchases from December of 2017 to July 2018, allegedly made by a deputy employed by the Macon County Sheriff's Department, it said. Several current and former employees of the Sheriff's Department were allegedly involved in the real estate transactions in violation of 55 ILCS 5/36026, which prohibits sheriffs and deputy sheriffs from purchasing real or personal property at Sheriff's Department sales. It's unclear who else is involved in the state police investigation. A court order, date stamped March 26, granted Kronk's request for a special prosecutor and said the subject matter of this case involves the offense of official misconduct. The court requested the Illinois Office of the State Attorney's Appellate Prosecutor appoint an attorney to review the state police report and make a determination. The director of the Appellate Prosecutor's Office, Patrick Delfino, declined comment. Jones said Thompson had bought properties on numerous occasions at what he described as judicial sales, which are conducted by the sheriff's office through a judge at the Macon County Courthouse. Thompson, through Jones, said he was unaware of any law that would bar him from participating in such sales. Furthermore, Chris was never made aware of any issue of him purchasing property at judicial sales as a private citizen and on his own time by anyone else involved in these sales, Jones added. The Herald and Review has filed a Freedom of Information Act request seeking the state police report of the investigation. Complicated situation. Greg Mattingly, a retired attorney and member of the Macon County Board, said he had heard nothing about the investigation until contacted by the Herald and Review. The only thing I can say is, if it occurred, illegal real estate sales, that is, I am certainly disappointed, he said, and I would like to see the findings in the investigation most definitely. Mattingly also wondered about the legal ramifications if some sales were ruled to have been made illegally and those properties have since been sold on again to unknowing buyers. The statute forbidding foreclosure sales to Sheriff's Department personnel also states that all purchases contravening the law shall be absolutely null and void. If a sale is ruled legally null and void, then that means it never occurred, period, said Mattingly, who stressed he was not an expert on real estate law. He said illegal sales could expose a messy bunch of legal complications, although title insurance might protect innocent buyers who suddenly find their house sale wasn't done legally. But it's a complicated situation, added Mattingly. County Board Chairman Kevin Greenfield said he had heard something about the investigation, but can't understand why it's such a big deal. These are public auctions, and I thought everybody had a right to bid on them, he said. Greenfield said he was unaware of the law banning officer participation in sales, but doesn't believe prosecutors should come down too hard. Let's just say to the boys, let's not go do it again, and we all go on our merry way, you know, he added. Our officers are the most reputable people I know, and they would not intentionally have done it, that is, broken the law. The story also includes what's entitled Sheriff's Sale Statute from the Illinois Compiled Statutes County's Code, and it reads, Section 3-6026. No purchase of property at own sale. No sheriff or deputy sheriff shall become the purchaser, nor procure any other person to become the purchaser for him or her of any property, real or personal, by him or her exposed to sale, by virtue of any judgment or process, and all such processes made by any sheriff or deputy sheriff, or by any other person in his or her behalf, shall be absolutely null and void. Source PA86-962. And again, for the story, that was by Tony Reed, who can be contacted at 217-421-7977. And you can also follow him on Twitter at Tony, T-O-N-Y, J, Reed, R-E-I-D. Thanks for listening. This story is entitled, I Love Helping People. Aspiring Certified Nurse Assistants Get Training by Valerie Wells, who can be contacted at valerie.wells@lee.net. That's valerie.wells@lee.net. Safiya Semino has known since high school that she wanted to be in nursing. Now a certified nurse assistant at Hickory Point Christian Village, Semino has plans to pursue further training and will begin classes at the Capital Area School of Practical Nursing in Springfield in August. She received her initial training thanks to Workforce Investment Solutions in Macon and DeWitt Counties, a community resource for meeting the skilled employee needs of local businesses. It is funded through the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act and helps workers develop skills and find employers in a variety of ways. Certified nurse assistants are one career in particularly high demand. I heard about their program and that I didn't have to pay out of pocket for anything, Simoneau said. I wanted to be a CNA, so I took the opportunity. Simoneau was her grandmother's caregiver, and while she was a student at MacArthur High School, she volunteered at a nursing home to earn service learning hours. I saw that some of the residents didn't have family that came to see them, she said. They didn't have nobody to talk to, and I wanted to be that somebody, that family that could be there for them. She has continued to feel that way now that she's working at Christian Village, where she considers her relationship with the residents paramount. Executive Director Rocky Wilkerson said Workforce Investment Solutions has an information sessions as needed for 17 to 24-year-olds interested in healthcare or any number of job opportunities. The basis of it is, kids that are not in school and not employed, we want to bring them in and do some testing and assessing and figure out what their career interests are and help them develop, she said. That could include work experience with an employer, getting them into the CNA program, or if they're interested in welding or manufacturing, finding additional training or work experience, she said. Wilkerson was previously with the Adult Education Department of the Decatur School District and had many of the same concerns. Adults who lack a high school diploma or whose skills are inadequate to find a job that will make them self-sufficient need some extra training to get to that point, and Workforce can help, she said. Certified nurse assistants are in high demand, said Lori Brown, Executive Director of Hickory Point Christian Village. The facility is a site for clinical experience for students in the CNA program and also hires many of those students after they pass their licensing exam. For many of them, Brown said, certification is a stepping stone, and their plans are to move on, as Simoneau intends to license practical nurse training or to become a registered nurse. That means that more CNAs are always needed. I had one of my nurses, registered nurse Karen Frallman, go through the teacher's course so she could learn to teach, and I worked with Richland and Wilkerson to get the class going, Brown said. We weren't able to hire all of them, but we did the class so the community was able to have CNAs put out into the community. CNAs have a median salary of $27,000 and $510, and job growth in the field will be 11% faster than average, according to the U.S. Department of Labor Bureau of Labor Statistics. By 2026, an additional 177,700 CNAs, or orderlies, will be needed compared to 2016. While a CNA can only provide personal care such as bathing, eating, and getting dressed, they're often the person who knows the residents best and the first to notice if something needs attention. Deasia Reed began working at Hickory Point when she finished her training and is also a MacArthur graduate. She started working at the facility in August 2017 and said she's right where she wants to be. I love helping people, she said. It runs in my family. Three nurses, a couple people going through CNA classes right now. I just love helping people out. Ever since I started working here, I've loved it. I'm not changing my career anytime soon. Again, the writer of this story, Valerie Wells, she can be contacted at 217-421-7982. Thanks for listening. This story is entitled, Board OKs $6 Million for Thomas Jefferson Renovations by Annalisa Tromamuk. The Decatur Board of Education on Tuesday approved spending $6 million on renovations for Thomas Jefferson Middle School, which will house the district's combined Montessori programs as part of a sweeping five-year facilities overhaul. Construction could start in October at Thomas Jefferson to turn it into the home for Decatur's two public Montessori programs, now at Garfield Montessori and Enterprise Schools. The $6 million would go toward renovating 30,000 square feet of Thomas Jefferson's 112,000 square foot building, where Garfield's and Enterprise's Montessori programs will be in August 2020. Tons of research went into the remodel, and we believe it is going to be a successful project, Superintendent Paul Frigo said during Tuesday's meeting at the Kiel Administration Building. The vote was 5-0, with two members absent. Once the schools are combined, about 800 students will be enrolled in the combined program. Montessori programs are known for their unique educational philosophy, which includes hands-on and self-directed learning. District leaders hope the larger space will alleviate a lengthy waiting list for the popular programs. Combining the Montessori programs and moving them to Thomas Jefferson is phase two in the district's strategic plan to reconfigure district buildings, closing some and consolidating others to best use available space. Over several years, the wide-ranging $55 million project will reduce the number of district school buildings from 22 to 17, add air conditioning at all buildings, and increase the capacity for some of the most popular programs. The $6 million budget allocated to move Garfield and Enterprise into Thomas Jefferson will cover the costs of moving the programs into Thomas Jefferson, as well as renovating the building and purchasing furniture. Specific details regarding the renovations have not yet been ironed out, but will be discussed in a future board meeting. Large projects are under consideration, such as improving early childhood and middle school classrooms. Administrative spaces like the principal's office and reception will also undergo renovations. Combining the Montessori programs would come after Thomas Jefferson students combine with those already at Stephen Decatur Middle School in a renovated building there. That change is set to take effect in August of this year. The sweeping facilities overhaul, known as the BOLD Plan, Building Better Opportunities for Learning in Decatur, BOLD, is part of the Decatur School District's five-year strategic plan. Its aim is to make Decatur a destination district for parents, no matter what part of the city they live in, and to create a more financially sustainable future. The district will welcome a new assistant superintendent next school year, Chicago Public School Network Operations Manager Jeff Days. Days has worked in Chicago Public Schools for the past 17 years, starting out in 2002 as an elementary teacher. The board approved Days' three-year contract for the 2019 to 2022 school years with a $156,715 salary. Again, this story was written by Annalisa Tomific. She can be reached at 217-421-7985. Thanks for listening. This story is entitled Improving Readers Show Off Their Skills. Youngsters Read to Babies as Reward for Hard Work by Valerie Wells. Raymere Kennedy wanted to read a book about fishing to the littles at Baby Talk Early Head Start Center on Tuesday because he likes to go fishing. He even caught one on his last fishing trip. It was a brown fish, the French Academy first grader said, holding his hands a few inches apart to show its size. Getting a chance to read to the younger children is one of the incentives in French Academy's Reading Recovery Program, designed for students who test below their grade level in reading. Students earn stickers for reading books and are rewarded once they fill up this page of stickers, said Megan Mayrick, the school's parent liaison. It's close to school and it's free, and it doesn't cost anything to do this, so I thought, why not? Mayrick said. Raymere and his cousin Javiah Kennedy, who are in the same first grade class together, both earned enough stickers for the trip at the same time and read their favorite books to the 1 to 3 year olds at Baby Talk. Having children read to the little ones is good for them, said Baby Talk teacher Suzanne Minton. We read to them all the time, Minton said. They can look up to these kids as role models. And while some of the little ones were easily distracted by toys in the window, Abel Fain and Amaria Hood squeezed into a chair together right next to the big kids and hung on every word. Amanda Roberts, the literacy interventionist at French, works with kids in kindergarten, first and second grade who struggle with reading. All students are required to read 1 to 2 books every night at home, and their parents fill out a reading log. A student earns the chance to read to the babies after reading 60 books, Roberts said. It really helps boost their confidence and motivation as readers. It also encourages others who may be reluctant to do their reading homework, she said. These students also work very hard at making their reading sound like a storyteller, so the other benefit is that it helps them become more fluent and expressive in their reading. Both Raymere and Javiah certainly did that. She read The Lion's Tale, and Raymere read Baby Bear Goes Fishing, which they said were their favorite books right now. The young readers paused to turn the books toward their audience so they could see the pictures and were undisturbed when the smaller children interrupted or pointed at pictures. After reading to the youngsters in the classroom, the first graders went outside to read to kids who stopped playing to gather around and listen. They worked to get to earn to do this, Mayrick said. I have to read a book every day and get stars, Raymere said. They both brought stars with them, and every time Javiah's fell off her book, Raymere picked it up and gave it back to her. Again, this story was by Valerie Wells, who can be reached at 217-421-7982. Thanks for listening. This story is called Drive-Through Burglar Arrested, Police Say, by Tony Reed. A Decatur man is facing a preliminary charge of burglary after police said he stepped into a car in the drive-through lane of a restaurant and later helped himself to loose change in the center console. A sworn affidavit from Decatur police said the incident happened about 9:15 p.m. on March 22nd outside the Dairy Queen restaurant at 230 West First Drive. The affidavit said police found and arrested the 51-year-old man Monday evening after he had earlier been identified by the 16-year-old driver. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. Officer Stephanie Vail, writing in the affidavit, said the driver told police he had first been approached by the man begging for money while he was in the restaurant. The driver then left and drove into the drive-through lane to buy more food and was again approached by the man, who this time said he needed a jump start for a vehicle in the parking lot. This driver stated he told the man he would follow him to his vehicle once he received his order, said Vail. He stated the man, without permission, then entered his vehicle and sat in the passenger seat. The man proved to be lying about a car in the parking lot and instead told the driver to head north on US 51 to Cleveland Avenue. The man then helped himself to $10 in change from the console and said, "I'm going to need the money," said Vail. The man later gave some of the coins back in exchange for more cash and was given a $10 bill. The victim stated that the man told him, "You're lucky I'm not one of those people that would stab you or jab you," said Vail. The victim stated that the man then directed him to drive to another part of town where he exited the vehicle. The victim stated that he feared he would be battered if he did not comply with the demands of the man. He stated that the man was crazy. Vail said a check of records showed the man is on parole for aggravated robbery and has an extensive criminal history. He remained held in the Macon County Jail on Tuesday night in lieu of posting $75,000 bond. Again, this story is by Tony Reed, who can be contacted at 217-421-7977. Thanks for listening. This story is titled Culinary Creativity by Valerie Wells. Marcia Leach loves reading murder mysteries, so choosing one for her Edible Books project was a given. She chose a book called Serial Killers and made Rice Krispie treats, dribbling some red food coloring on top and including a wicked-looking, but rubber, Bowie knife for her display dubbed Serial Killer. The library has done this for several years, and most of us library workers do participate, said Leach, a circulation specialist. As soon as we finish one year, we start thinking about our next one. The annual Edible Books Festival is an international event usually celebrated April 1st. Millikan University chose this week for their celebration because it's National Library Week, said Nancy Weichert, research and instructional librarian at Millikan. The university has held the festival 9 years, but had to take a hiatus while the university commons was under construction. Since restarting the festival, the attendance has been lower than it was previously, but she said she hopes it's regaining popularity. People find a book and then try to make something edible that somewhat reflects that book or is a pun on the book, she said. They can use part of the plot line or make food that looks like the cover. It's basically just an edible creation that's inspired by the book. Students, faculty, and staff participate, and those who attended could vote for most creative, punniest entry, the best pun, most edible, and favorite entry. One memorable entry was a Sloan's Calzones pizza that included sausage on one slice that had been doused with the hottest of hot sauces. Owner Brent Sloan is a friend of Eric McKinney, educational technology and catalog specialist for the library at Millikan. The person who found the extra hot slice of pizza won a gift card to Sloan's. The book for that entry was Pizza, Pigs, and Poetry by Jack Prelutsky. The game was dubbed Pizza Roulette. If you die, you're disqualified, McKinney quipped. No one died, of course, but the students who found the hot sausage turned bright red, Leach said, and one turned pale. A nursing student created a 3D version of Captain Underpants and did such a good job, Weichert said, that the library staff suggested perhaps she should change her major to pastry chef. Rachel Basici, associate professor and librarian, made bread for her choice of book, A Time of Dread, which of course became A Time of Bread. It was actually my brother's idea, Basici said. The siblings enjoy books in the fantasy genre, like that one, and both had read it. The main idea of the event is fellowship and fun, Weichert said, and a sure way to get Millikan students together is to offer free food. Sloan's donated several pizzas, and all of the entries were edible, too. Quite a few students came in and went during the event, though Leach said she'd be happy with even more. I'd like to fill this space, Leach said, referring to the ground floor of the University Commons. There's an additional note on some of the history here of the Edible Books Festival, which says the first Edible Books Festival was held in 2000 and has spread to academic libraries worldwide. It was created by Judith Hofberg at the University of California, who got the idea during a Thanksgiving celebration. A key component of Edible Books Festivals is that the edible creations must be consumed at the event. Again, the story is written by Valerie Wells. Thanks for listening. This story is entitled Feds Bust $1.2 Billion Medicare Scam by Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar. Federal authorities said Tuesday they've broken up a $1.2 billion Medicare scam that peddled unneeded orthopedic braces to hundreds of thousands of seniors via foreign call centers. The Justice Department announced charges against 24 people across the U.S., including doctors accused of writing bogus prescriptions for unneeded back, shoulder, wrist, and knee braces. Others charged included owners of call centers, telemedicine firms, and medical equipment companies. The Health and Human Services Inspector General's office said the fast-moving scam morphed into multiple related schemes fueled by kickbacks among the parties involved. The FBI, the IRS, and 17 U.S. attorneys' offices took part in the crackdown. Medicare's anti-fraud unit said it's taking action against 130 medical equipment companies implicated. They billed the program a total of $1.7 billion, of which more than $900 million was paid out. Telemarketers would reach out to seniors offering free orthopedic braces, also touted through television and radio ads. Beneficiaries who expressed interest would be patched through to call centers involved in the scheme. Officials described an international telemarketing network with call centers in the Philippines and throughout Latin America. The call centers would verify seniors' Medicare coverage and transfer them to telemedicine companies for consultations with doctors. "The telemedicine we are talking about is basically a telescam," said Gary Cantrell, who oversees fraud investigations for the HHS Inspector General's office. The doctors would write prescriptions for orthopedic braces, regardless of whether the patients needed them or not. In some cases, several braces were prescribed for the same patient. The call centers would collect prescriptions and sell them to medical equipment companies, which would ship the braces to beneficiaries and bill Medicare. Medical equipment companies would get $500 to $900 per brace from Medicare and would pay kickbacks of nearly $300 per brace. The scam was detected last summer, officials said. Complaints from beneficiaries were pouring into the Medicare fraud hotline, and some consumer news organizations warned seniors. As the investigation progressed, Cantrell said, federal agents gained cooperation from people familiar with the various schemes. Officials said it's one of the biggest frauds the Inspector General's office has seen. Charges were being brought against defendants in California, Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, and Texas. "The breadth of this nationwide conspiracy should be frightening to all who rely on some form of health care," IRS Criminal Investigations Chief Don Fort said in a statement. "The conspiracy details broad corruption, massive amounts of greed, and systemic flaws in our healthcare system that were exploited by the defendants. Healthcare fraud is a pervasive problem that costs taxpayers tens of billions of dollars a year." Thanks for listening. Here's another story from Associated Press entitled "Number of Jobs Plummet in February" by Christopher Rugeber. The number of available jobs in the U.S. fell sharply in February after nearly reaching a record level the previous month, a sign that businesses may pull back a bit on hiring. The Labor Department said Tuesday that job openings dropped 7.1% to 7.1 million, the lowest level in nearly a year. The number of people quitting their jobs was nearly unchanged. The figures suggest the job market is still solid, but they also echo the mild slowdown in hiring that has occurred so far this year. Employers have added an average of 180,000 jobs a month in the first 3 months this year, down from nearly 225,000 last year. Still, that level of hiring is enough to lower the unemployment rate, currently 3.8%, over time. The tally of open jobs far outnumbers the 6.2 million people who were officially unemployed in February. For the nearly 20 years that the data has been kept, the situation has typically been the reverse. The job market's downshift appears to be following a similar path set by the economy. Growth reached 2.9% in 2018, the fastest in 4 years, but most economists expect growth to slow this year to between 2% and 2.5%. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald in Review for April 10th, 2019. Thanks for listening, and please stay tuned.